The long-term benefit of owning a business is the gradual translation of business success into personal wealth. And so if you are not systematically routing some of the profits to your personal balance sheet, then I would ask you to take a look at that and think about it.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, once again to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Stephen Wershing. Stephen, what's up, man? How are you?
Ben, thanks for joining me. Thanks for joining me. thanks for inviting me. I host a podcast too. So thanks for inviting me. It's great to talk with you.
Hey, you're joining me. I'm joining you. What's your podcast? Tell us a little bit about that.
30 Minute Money. It's actionable tips in little bite-sized pieces. And so you can read all about it at 30minute.money.
30 Minute Money. So while we're on it, let's just dive right into that. Give me... Sure. Something super actionable. Where well, this is a clean slate. We don't even know what we're talking about yet as a listener. Give me something super actionable that's maybe in that podcast.
Wow, super actionable. The difficulty with financial planning is super actionable. that would apply to everybody all at once. Project how much tax you're going to have to pay in retirement, because most people haven't thought about that, and they're going to pay way more than they think.
Interesting. So once you're retired, you pay tax every year, reoccurring regardless?
Well, yeah, sure. And to the extent that you have money that comes from taxable sources, that's a lot of what we work on here, is to try to minimize that. But for example, most people have gone through their entire careers putting money into their retirement plans, right? Being good little savers and following the advice of people like me saying defer, 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 defer. And then they get to age 73 and they have required minimum distributions, and the whole thing blows up because all of a sudden they're being forced to take out a lot more money than they actually need, and they have to pay a lot more tax. And, while you're working, you're taxed on how much you make. But in retirement, you're taxed on where it comes from. And if you let that get out of control, it can suck the life out of your retirement nest egg.
And so we're not going to square peg round hole this conversation, because every individual has a very unique situation. Is that what you guys do at Focus Wealth Advisors? You come in, is it tax? Give us the bird's eye view of the business. Let's start there.
We help people who are approaching retirement set up low tax or no tax retirements. So we really have a focus on, we do comprehensive financial planning. So we talk about the portfolio and we talk about risk management and estate planning, but there's a real heavy concentration on advanced tax planning, so that, you can set things up in such a way that not only do they work from an investment standpoint, but they work for you long-term from a tax standpoint as well.
You said no tax retirement?
If it's possible, if you start early enough.
what does that look like, without getting as too microscopic? Honestly, you tell me. Get as microscopic as you want. What's that look like?
Well, I'll give you sort of the general perspective on it. When you get into retirement, there are three tax buckets you can put your nest egg in: the taxable bucket, the tax deferred bucket, and the tax free bucket. The taxable bucket is just, accounts that you have in your name, bank accounts, brokerage accounts, that kind of stuff. The tax deferred bucket is the retirement plans. It's IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, all that kind of stuff. The tax free bucket is the bucket that you can put money into and pull money out of, or that you can take money out of without having to pay tax on it. So, for example, the Roth IRA is one of the major tools in that toolbox. That once you put it in there, it grows until retirement, on, you know, as long as you've met a couple of basic criteria, you pull money out of a Roth, it never shows up on your 1040 form.
Doesn't show up on the 1040. This is awesome. I always encourage people, get advice from an expert. We're not going to be able to give individualized advice to everybody.
Right, right.
But one thing we can tackle, because I'm super curious, is getting to know Stephen a little bit. So what got you into this business, this field in the, you could have been an astronaut, you could have been a lawyer, you could have been a marine biologist, you could have chose anything. What got you into this field? Tell us the story.
Well, I'll give you two aspects on it. One was, you know, I was really, when I was a young man, I was very interested in real estate, and I started getting involved in real estate. And, you know, was working in real estate, brokering investment properties and that kind of stuff. And then, tell you how old I am, the Congress came along and passed the Tax Reform Act of 86 and sort of deep sixed that career. But I really liked the analysis. I really liked guiding people into successful investments and that kind of stuff. And so I answered an ad, and I lucked out and I got into the financial planning field. But I'll tell you that what drove my current business is that some years ago I was doing some continuing education, and you know I've been a financial planner for a long time. I've been a certified financial planner since 1991, but it was only a bunch of years ago that I did this deeper dive into the tax aspects of it in regard to retirement. And by the way, things are changing, and this is one of the reasons that I didn't know about it that long ago, is that, you know, things have changed to make this more relevant. But all of a sudden, I realized how much taxes were going to affect people in retirement, and how amazingly much good you could do if you did some planning in the years leading up to retirement. And I just got totally fired up about it. And I mean, you know, so when somebody calls and says, you know, and wants to talk with me about possibly being a client, you know, I do an analysis for them ahead of time, and I you know, I do a long-term projection on their taxes, and I do, you know, we have six basic strategies that we apply to it. And so we do like a quick study. We don't charge for that. We just want to, before I ask somebody to pay me what I charge as a financial planner, I want to make sure that both of us are convinced that it's more than worth the price. So right. I'm willing to have my staff, you know, put together some analyses and take a look at it. And I'm routinely finding that that you do the right things and you end up saving, you know, five or six figures in tax over the course of your retirement. I mean, it can be really dramatic but these are things that, you know, even a lot of my colleagues don't really look that closely at. And so that's why, you know, it's kind of a mission for me, is because, you know, there are a lot of investment people, there are a lot of financial people in Rochester. There's not actually that much planning going on. And so I really, you know, I want to get the word out because people need to hear it. And you know, the messages that our industry sends out can be really confusing.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who would complain about saving five to six figures
by having a plan
in place.
But a lot of people go to the person that they work with on their finances, and you know, they're not getting a long-term projection of tax, for example, you know, and without that, I mean, you don't really know what kinds of problems you need to head off. So that got me really fired up about it. I've always been excited about financial planning, but when I saw just how big the change, you know, how much effect we could have on people's lives, I got totally fired up anew in my career. So that's kind of what made for Focused Wealth Advisors.
I love this. And it is a huge change in people's lives. So planning and the numbers, people get exhausted with analysis paralysis or not knowing what to do or this or that. So let's not dive too much into that. I want to ask you this question. How does someone's life change? Like, how does someone's life actually change knowing that they can retire, they're keeping as much money as they can? What kind of things do your clients do instead of stressing over this kind of stuff?
Well, that's it, is that they just don't have to stress over it. You know, the biggest question on most people's minds as they approach retirement is, do I have enough? And, you know, and that goes for everybody. I mean, I had a meeting with a client a couple hours ago. This is somebody who's got millions of dollars. He's got more than enough to support his lifestyle. And, you know, he comes in and he's like, am I going to have enough? Is this going to work? I'm like, dude,
you got plenty.
You're going to be okay. Yeah. It's going to be fine. but really, you know, And especially for people who are a little bit closer, yeah, don't have quite the margin of safety. If you take a bunch of tax out of the picture, it just creates a margin of safety, a cushion of safety that it just, it makes it a lot easier to feel less stressed about whether or not you're going to have enough. So that's one of the major effects on people. It's also, I don't know if all of my clients get a thrill out of it like I do, but I love denying the government money. So anytime I can cut people's taxes, it's just a great day for me. So,
it's no matter where you fall on taxes or where it's state or this or that, I think everyone would agree that if there's an option in place that's ethical, that'll keep, you know, your funds with you so you can contribute to charities, to your family, you can go on the next vacation. I don't know if that, I think that's kind of bipartisan, that I'd love to know that my funds are safe, secure, and being handled properly.
Right. Well, I the way I look at it is, you worked hard to accumulate this.
I didn't, Stephen.
You're still a young guy. So. But, you know, people who've accumulated savings, they worked hard for that, and they deserve to use it for them and not to have to share it. But the bigger thing, frankly, is that I'm along with a whole bunch of people, I'm solidly convinced that taxes are going to go up, and maybe dramatically, in the next bunch of years. Just, you know, the federal government has such a humongous debt, $31 trillion in debt. Something like almost a third of the federal budget is starting to have to go to making payments on interest on the federal debt. That's likely to go up because they're not going to stop spending. You know, we're actually, historically speaking, since going back to 1913, when they started systematically, you know, when they passed the legislation that created the modern income tax, we're in a relatively low tax environment. Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, everybody feels like they pay a lot, but you know what? In the 70s, in the 60s, people paid a lot more, and we're probably heading back in that direction. And so if you have about enough to retire on, if they raise taxes a lot, you may not have enough to retire on. So, you know, it's a big deal. I get to have a meaningful effect on people's lives, and that's exciting.
And to my understanding, properly investing and having a plan is a little bit of like a ledger cushion or just like protection against things like inflation, raising taxes, stuff like that, that offers a little bit of protection against that, right?
Right. Anything that you can do to reduce expenses will enable you to keep more money for retirement, whether that expense be a tax or whether it be expenses you pay on investments or whether it be, you know, something else that's, you know, involved in your strategy, you know, and any of those things that can be thought of as an expense. If you can cut out those, then you don't have to cut out the expenses of having a nice lifestyle. So I would rather the expenses be on the lifestyle side than on, you know, the portfolio side.
Fair enough. It's good to have someone like you in the corner, because I don't know if people can tell, I can kind of pretend like I'm knowing, I definitely can pretend like I know what I'm talking about, but right. I don't know the tiny minutia things. Like, I know that the world, the internet, I haven't read the articles yet, is exploding over Silicon Valley Bank. All I know is I own a lot of ETFs, and I own some fractional partial shares of SVP stock, SVB rather. I noticed a slight decrease, nothing major, but it seems like there's something big going on. Now, today's what, March 16th? This will come out in early April. So I'm not asking you to predict the future or have a crystal ball, but I'm just asking you, what the heck's going on? Should I be concerned? Should I be touching my portfolio? Any of that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on what's going on?
Yeah, well, so the biggest comparison that people think about when they think of this is 2007, 2008, when we had the banking crisis that triggered that huge downturn in the markets and started the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. This is not 2008. SVB made, you know, the bank made a number of bad decisions in terms of how they structured their portfolio. So they had a whole lot of, you know, they were invested in long-term treasuries. So that's good and secure. It's also You know, it also, when they invested in that, treasuries were paying, you know, 1.5%, and they pay like 4 now. And so those treasury securities, I mean, they will pay off, but in the meantime, they've gone way down in value. And there were a bunch of, you know, because the customers of Silicon Valley Bank are all really connected. They're all, you know, they're in Silicon Valley after all. You know, they started texting each other and saying, geez, you know, I think we probably ought to move some money out of this bank. And it caused the modern version of the classic run on the bank. So we did not have people standing on the sidewalk around the block waiting to see the teller to take their money out. Even worse, they could just get on the web and do it. And they had a classic run. I mean, they just had people starting to withdraw their accounts like crazy. And if they were to, you know, try to sell that portfolio of securities, they would get a lot more than they invested in it. And they had a liquidity crisis. So this is not something systemic like was the case in 2008, where the banking industry was making fundamental errors and, you know, there were all kinds of things going on there and a real estate decline at the same time. There was a whole lot of stuff going on in 2008 that's not going on now. So, you know, there are some good questions that people should be asking themselves, like, should you keep more than $100,000 or $250,000 in any one bank? Should you research which bank you're in? So, right today, the news is about Credit Suisse, which may very well go under or get bought. And Credit Suisse is a foreign bank, so they do not have a lot of the protections that American banks have because of the regulatory structure that we have. So, you know, one of the downsides of having all that protection is people don't really think they need to do as much due diligence as they might. They just figure, well, if I put the money in the bank, it's going to be okay. It's not a bad idea to do a little research about the institutions you deal with financially. And so, you know, so there are some things that that people could do, but I would not be overly worried. Now I believe there's a recession coming. The market may very well go down because of the recession and that kind of stuff, but I would not worry about SVB triggering another thing like we saw in 2008.
Okay, so it's eye opening that maybe I should diversify the different banks that I have my money in. Maybe it's a little eye-opening, but in layman's terms, I shouldn't be like concerned. This isn't the next big explosion.
That's right. This is not a meltdown.
Well, it's interesting. So if I don't have this much money right now sitting in the bank, but if I had $200,000 sitting in the bank, I just can't walk. I can't walk in the bank and ask my $200,000 and they'll just give me $100 bills, right? Where's my money?
Well, that's the thing, right?
That's what concerns me. Like,
that's the basis of banking, right? Yeah. That there's never, like, if you take all of the deposits they have, there's never that big pile of money sitting someplace. That banking couldn't work that way. So what they do, you know, in simple terms, you deposit your money with the bank. The bank takes that money and loans it to people to do things like buy houses, and they collect money on the mortgage and they pay you interest on your account. And the difference between those two interest rates is how they make money. But the money you've given them is at work someplace. And so, you know, you could go in and say, I want my $250,000, and they could probably come up with it for you. But if everybody did that, then you would be at Silicon Valley Bank. So
yikes. What else? Again, I'm a layman, so I know a couple things. What else is new and exciting and or cautiously horrifying? What else what else do we need to pay attention to here in 2023?
Yeah, well, not that, you know, few people don't want to dig into this as far as, you know, as people like me do, but, you know, what's horrifying is the federal debt and the fact that they, you know, people of the government just kind of deny that it's a problem. But, you know, more and more and more of the federal budget is non-discretionary, meaning Congress doesn't really get a chance to vote on it. They have to pay it, right? And so it's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, and interest on the federal debt. All of that together is beginning to approach half of federal expenditures. It might actually be exceeding that by now. So the, you know, everything else they do, the military, the post office, national park system, all of that stuff is above and beyond that, much of it on the credit card. So that's terrifying to people like me, but You know, but on the other hand, there are a whole lot of really cool opportunities that are popping up lately about, first, you know, interest rates are up. That's bad on a number of counts. But, you know, if you're moving into retirement and you need income producing securities, this is way better than it was a year ago. You know, I went out and found a 5.15% CD for one of my clients the other day. You couldn't do that a year ago. You know, you might be able to clear a percent. So, you know, so that's good. They passed the Secure Act 2.0. That's exciting. It's one of the aspects is the Rothification of pretty much everything. So we've had Roth IRAs now for a while, but now we have expanded Roth 401ks, Roth 403bs. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that you could, you know, do under the new act that you couldn't before. The, you know, the required minimum distribution dates are a little bit higher, so you can work on the strategies to get money into the tax-free bucket before you're forced to take a minimum out of your retirement plans. Those are some of the exciting things that are going on.
And I am a small business owner, very small. I'm a sole proprietor right now. A lot of the listeners, they're either business entrepreneurs, they're sales, business development, HR, they're all across the board. What does all this mean to me? And I guess we'll talk about the small business owner because there's a lot of different things we could tackle. Does any of this change my life much as a small business owner, as a business person? What should I be focused on? Because I can't be focused on all this stuff. I mean, you've been doing it for years and years, and there's always something new. What should me, little old small business owner, be focused on?
Okay, well, two things I'll say. One that comes out of Secure 2.0 is that if you are a small business owner and you do not yet have a retirement plan or you want to put one in, the Congress is offering you pretty significant tax credits for doing that. So if you don't have a retirement plan in place and you want to start, for example, a 401k, you know, you're going to get credits that are generous enough that, you know, if you want to make contributions on behalf of your employees, you know, that the cost of that just went way down for the next 3 years because there are really significant incentives to start a retirement plan. But the big thing I would say long term that people that I would ask people to think in mind is, you know, why are you in business in the first place? Some people do it because they like building things, and I get that. I like to build things too. And some people, you know, have, you know, other reasons. Some people just want to solve a problem, and so they start a business. But the long-term benefit of owning a business is the gradual translation of business success into personal wealth. And so if you are not systematically routing some of the profits to your personal balance sheet, then I would ask you to take a look at that and think about it. Because if you're a small business owner, you know, if you're like most small business owners, you have a diversification problem. The overwhelming portion of your wealth is tied up in a single asset.
Okay.
And from an investment management standpoint, that's not a good idea. And I don't care if you're successful today. I don't care if things are going gangbusters. Things can change. And so the name of the game is systematically taking a little bit of that success and putting it on your personal balance sheet. Because if you do that long enough and something happens to the business, you're going to be okay. If you do that long enough and your business prospers and you can sell it for $1 gazillion, great, you're even better off. But if anything goes wrong, you want to make sure that you're systematically building things for yourself so that, you know, a business problem doesn't turn into a personal tragedy.
What are your thoughts on someone like saying, I'm bootstrapping, we're moving quickly, I end up getting paid less because I pay my team, I pay myself last.
Yep.
Is there a way to not pay yourself less and or still pay the investment? Like sometimes you are taking very small revenue to yourself in a short period of time to get to that larger level. What are your thoughts? I mean, should I still be saving? Is this mentality flawed? What's your opinion?
It, you know, if you're building a business and the business is new, I mean, that's just how it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's, you may not be able to fund a lot of what you'd like to be able to fund. You may not be able to live the lifestyle you want to live while you're building the business. I mean, that's just the evolution of a business. I get it. What I would suggest, though, is keep it in mind, because when you get to that point, you want to make sure you start doing that to help to pay you back for all those years that you sacrificed to build this thing that's now successful. So don't put that off. You know, it may not be the right time right now, because if you've got a young business and you're bootstrapping and you're working like crazy and the cash flow stinks, I get that. I understand that. When it gets better, you know, make sure that you think about how you're going to incorporate that idea into the long-term plan, because that should be the payoff for doing all that hard work and sacrificing for all those years to get yourself a successful business.
You know, we treat ourselves with a beer, we go out to the game, we go on vacation. Sounds like part of treating yourself is, now I have the income, I have the growth, I have the momentum that I can put it in this other bucket and protect myself over time. So part of treating ourselves isn't the fancy meal. It's actually the preparation for our retirement, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, you should do both. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
What I'm talking about is more like strategic planning. I think that, you know, when you get to be successful, you should definitely celebrate. You should take your whole team out to dinner. You should throw a party. You should do all that kind of stuff, because it's important to celebrate those kinds of successes. When you sit down to update your long-term strategic plan, that systematic building of personal wealth should be part of that process.
Love it. We talked about a small business owner. A lot of listeners aren't business owners. They're just kick butt and they're continuing to move up in their roles. Let's say they're preparing for retirement. Let's say they're not retiring yet. They're just listening and they're curious as to, you know, they're going to do some planning. What kind of moves, and this is general, I know we're broad strokes.
Sure.
What kind of consultative questions do you ask them? What kind of planning should they be considering? And like, what does the conversation look like, you know?
Yeah. Looking way down the road, maybe not way down the road, but looking down the road, the secret to be able to manage how much tax you pay is having a good allocation of money across those three tax buckets we talked about: taxable, tax deferred, and tax free. Most of the people who come into my office to start a conversation have the same problem, and that is that they've got 85% of their wealth in the tax deferred bucket. That limits or eliminates most of your options. So the one thing that I would suggest everybody does, and this is everybody can do this, is just list all your accounts and what they're worth and put them into those three buckets. How much of these are taxable, regular personal accounts? How much of these are deferred retirement accounts? And how much of these are tax-free accounts? And if you can see that you currently either have a real concentration in the deferred bucket, or you can see you're headed in that direction, then that should tell you that you should get some help to make sure that you don't end up like a lot of people, where their overwhelming amount of wealth is in the tax deferred bucket. Because if you get into retirement, or if you get into required minimum distribution age, and you're still in that situation, there's not a lot you can do. You got one lever to pull, and whenever you need money, you got to pull that lever, and you're going to be sharing it with the government.
Got it. Okay. So is there any publicly available tools I can utilize? You said, you know, list out your different, you know, where your money is in these different categories. Is there a tool that does that for me? I know, for example, my Chase bank account shows my credit score and shows my other credit cards.
Right.
Is there a tool that does it all encompassing, or do I need to do this on my own, or do I need to talk to someone who can do it for me? What are your thoughts? Is there a tool?
Well, just setting up, just getting an idea of how much you have in each bucket is really easy. You know, you could do it with Excel. You could do it on a piece of paper with a pen. But if you want something that updates all the time, you could look at Quicken, you could look at Mint, you could look at, you know, any of those. You know, your bank may provide account aggregation services, anything that pulls all your accounts together so you can see them all in one place. You know, from there, if the software doesn't categorize it for you, it's pretty straightforward to just separate the values into those three different buckets.
This is interesting stuff.
Well, I'm glad please, you find it interesting.
Please add on. It sounded like you were going somewhere.
No, I mean, you know, we like our clients aggregate all their accounts in our planning system. So, you know, we use the same planning system that the majority of, or not a majority, it's the most widely used planning system among financial advisors like me. And, you know, it will automatically download all the accounts that we work on, but clients can also connect all their other accounts. They can connect their bank accounts and their credit cards and their outside investment accounts, their 401ks, that kind of thing. And it all downloads. And one of the nice things is you can get a report that says, here's how much is taxable. Here's how much is tax deferred. How much is tax free. But I think most of the publicly available programs probably don't categorize it that way quite that easily. But again, as long as you've got a list of accounts and, you know, you can recognize what they are by their label, then it separating them into those three buckets should be pretty easy.
Pretty easy. I love this. And why I find this intriguing is, I simply put, and we know this, knowledge is power. And I don't know everything about this, but being a educated consumer, it's obviously important. I mean, this is our life. So, and in a second, I want to talk about referrals because I got some spicy questions about that. But
sure.
What kind of questions when I'm going in and I'm planning my retirement, I've built up income, I want to ensure it's in the right place. And it's, what kind of questions do I need to be asking the advisor in front of me to ensure that they have my best interest in mind and they're not going to just make a deal that's going to bring in the most commission for them so they can go on vacation? What kind of questions do I need to ask to ensure I'm talking to an actual trusted advisor?
Sure. Well, and it should be a fairly straightforward question, but unfortunately, you know, we're a sales culture. So, you know, people spin things a lot of different ways. You know, the word fiduciary comes up a lot. And so, but you know, that can be,
I don't know what that means.
It can be a rabbit hole. It, you know, the fiduciary means that you have a legal requirement to put the client's interests first.
Right.
Not everybody is, you know, but that's, like I said, that can get complicated.
I've heard scenarios where that doesn't sound like it was the case.
It was not. No, there are plenty of situations where, you know, people sold things because they would get a big commission on them.
Right.
And, you know, that's one of the challenges is, you know, how does a layperson, you know, figure out who's a good fiduciary advisor and who's a, you know, salesperson that's just trying to make the big buck.
That's exactly why I asked.
Well, so there are two really good questions that you can, if you talk to a financial person, two questions you should ask. First is, how do you get paid? And if they don't give you a very straightforward and logical sounding answer, move on. Now, they might overcomplicate things a little bit, but unless they're really clear about how they get paid, you don't have to deal with somebody like that, you know? And I think this happens less and less, but I mean, you know, there used to be all kinds of things that people said, you know, in response to that was just deceptive, like, well, you know, you don't pay me, the company pays me, and, you know, crazy things like that. I'm hoping nobody still says that anymore. But, you know, ask them how they get paid and ask them to lay it out for you. I mean, you know, you deserve full disclosure. The law says that you should have full disclosure.
Hmm.
That should be easy to answer. The other thing is, I would ask somebody, you know, if you're heading toward or into retirement, then you need to have a written income plan. You need to have a written tax plan. So if you're going to go talk to somebody, say, could I see a sample plan? Could I see what a plan looks like? And if they can't show you a plan that covers the things you think should be covered, yeah, you can move on. I think too few people ask that, and they listen to what the advisor describes as what their services are. But you can cut through a lot of that just by saying, "Great, show me a plan." And that's, you know, those are two easy things that you can ask. I mean, there are all kinds of other things that you can ask, but those are two real simple, straightforward things that can make your first cut a lot easier.
Mm. How do you get paid? Show me a plan. And if there's discomfort in that process, I can just go find someone who will do those two things for me, right?
There are plenty of folks that can answer those two questions well. You don't have to deal with somebody who can't. There's plenty to choose from. You know, there are a lot of financial people in this town. So, you know, you don't, it's easy enough to find, you know?
Anything, so I'm going to hard pivot to referrals, but is there anything new and exciting or travesties or whatever I said before, anything else on your heart or mind you want to bring up that you think people should know, or we'll hard pivot right now?
Yeah, we can just pivot. If you want to talk about referrals, that'd be fine.
I'm very confused as to why you're telling people to stop asking for them.
Because if
you write a whole book on it,
I wrote a whole book on it. You want to see it? I got it right here. I got it. Stop asking for referrals.
That's rude.
It's rude to ask. I know I'm going to, I just lit up half your audience. So here's the synopsis of that idea. We human beings are social animals. We refer habitually. So you could ask yourself, when was the last time, when was the last time you made a referral to somebody? When was the last time you suggested a movie to a friend or a restaurant to a friend? When was the last time you helped a friend find a plumber or a doctor or a landscaping service or a babysitter? We do that constantly. It's part of our DNA. It's social currency. We do it because it builds relationships. We do it because, there was a social network researcher named Scott DeGraffenried, and he put it really well. We refer because it increases our esteem in the eyes of our peers.
Hmm.
So it's good to be the answer guy.
Yeah.
We refer all the time. If you are a business and you're not getting the referrals that you should, it does not mean that you have to pry referrals out of your customers. It means that you're not doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were, they would be referring.
What do you mean by that? Not doing something right?
Well, if you're creating the environment where the customer feels that intrinsic reward for making a referral. Listen, if I say, Ben, you got to try this new restaurant. It's awesome. I'm doing that because all the right pieces were in place. I had a good experience there. It's something I want to tell people about. I believe that you probably eat out periodically. So I suspect that you are looking for that kind of experience every so often. I know exactly how to hook people up so that they can connect easily and, have that experience. All the pieces are in place for me to get the good feels because you went and had a good time. If you're not getting referrals, something there is missing. Something is like people aren't connecting it for their friends. They don't understand what the value is. They don't understand why it's such a great experience. They might be perfectly satisfied, but it's not, they're not excited enough to want to tell other people about it. They're not sure if their friends, would qualify for or be in the market for that kind of thing. So if you get all those things in place, people will tell other people about you. And that's really what the book is all about, is helping people to understand, helping businesses understand, specifically in this case, financial advisors. I wrote the book for financial advisors, that, if you put all the pieces in place, then people will naturally refer because it's what we do. And you can help that along with some language, but the last thing you want to do is to sit somebody down and say, can you introduce me to, what are the names of three people that you know who could use my services? That's because that's not about the client. It's about you. It's greedy. You should always be serving the customer. And so when you say, hey, can you give me some names? Now you're not serving the customer anymore. You're serving yourself. And it sets up a bad dynamic. So I know that there's a whole industry about you should ask consistently. You should ask frequently. You should ask, more often. I disagree with that. You can talk about it, but you shouldn't be asking. So here's something that all of your listeners can benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody finally did a study about the language you can use to stimulate referrals. And I won't go into the whole formula I won't go into all the research and whatnot, but they boiled it down to a specific sequence of language that works well. The first one is you talk about what you would not want to do to the customer, specifically put them on the spot. The second thing is you want to highlight some bad outcome that people have if they don't go to you, if they go to somebody else who's less qualified, somebody who gives them an inferior experience. You want to highlight that for folks, and then you want to connect it with an offer at the end. So the way it sounds is, Ben, you might have noticed I've never asked you to introduce me to anybody, and that's because I never want to put you on the spot. At the same time, I worry that a lot of the people who are working with other financial people are not addressing these tax issues, and they're going to end up paying a ton more tax in retirement. So look, if there's anybody that you care about who may have that on their mind and would be open to a second opinion, I would be happy to talk with them. That's the whole thing. So I don't put them on the spot. I set it up properly. I highlight the negative consequences of not dealing with me. And then I help them narrow it down a little bit. Now, we say stuff like, if there's somebody you care about, but if you can narrow it down further, that would be even better, because you want to give people context. Because if you just say, can you think of somebody? Nobody will think of it. But if you put it in context, now they're going to think of three or four or five people. So that's the formula that Invesco Global Research came up with when they took a bunch of high-income folks and sat them in a little theater and tested out all kinds of different conversations on them.
And this was Invesco Global Research. So this isn't some pseudoscience-y fluff. This is actually
Well, and so have you ever seen they used a technology, and now, of course, I'm not going to be able to remember the firm that does this, but they sit everybody down, like the politicians do this a lot, the firms that are hired by political campaigns sit people down and they watch a speech and they have a little box in their hand, and the box has a button on it and it starts in the middle. And if they don't like something, they turn it to the left a little bit. If they do like something, they turn it to the right a little bit. And that, and when they monitor it in real time, that creates a line that goes up and down on the screen. And what the research firms do is they watch where that line goes up and down, and they associate it with specific things in the speeches. That's how they refine speeches. That's how, when the successful candidate gets toward the end of the campaign, they're saying all the things that make audiences happy. Well, that same firm got hired by Invesco to do this, and they tested out a whole bunch of different referral conversations on them, and they measured the up and down thing, and that's how they got to it. So this is real. This is honest to goodness, real consumer research done by a couple of really big firms.
It's brilliant. This is a slight rabbit hole. I'm not going to go way down it, but I'm imagining a restaurant where maybe they didn't do it for the general public, but they did a study. Just imagine if you could, in any business, so imagine your business, but I like the restaurant example because of how people friendly it is. You walk in. From the moment you walk in, you're judging everything. You can do the left or the right. Are you greeted? Are you greeted quickly? Do they take you down? Do they ask if you want water? Do they just bring you a beer without water? What does the food, as you're eating each of the courses, you could do it. Yeah. And I know this sounds ridiculous, but when you take this kind of data, and I know that you can't really necessarily, I mean, you actually probably could have that thing moving left or right. When you take this kind of data, what does that do for your business long term?
Right.
Like, and if someone already has the data and the system, why are we, for my number one form of business is referrals. Is there anyone you think that I could help? Why are we saying it that way if the data says we need to say it another way? It seems kind of ridiculous.
Right. And you've just hit on the other thing that, the thing I'm known for in the financial industry is doing client advisory boards. And I do more of them than anybody in the world. I've done them all over. Well, I've done them in five countries now. So, and that's what we do is we deconstruct the experience step by step. We pull together a dozen of the business's best customers, and then we walk through the experience step by step. What's it like scheduling a review meeting? What's it like when you walk into the office? What's it, Tell what worked in that meeting, what didn't. Let's go through a standard agenda. Which of these things is valuable to you? Which of the things should be cut back on? So a restaurant could do that kind of thing. It would be a little impractical to do the dial thing.
I think the dial thing would be hilarious.
It would be very interesting.
I guarantee this. I shouldn't say guarantee, but if the person that greets them and sits them down creates enough energy, the food will taste better.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, people don't go to restaurants for the food. People go to restaurants for the experience. So, you can have a really great meal, and if you have lousy service, you're not going back. If you have great service and a mediocre meal, you'll go back, because that's what it's about. People can eat at home, but they go out to celebrate successes. They go out to celebrate milestones in their lives. They go out to be with other people. They go out for all those are not eating. Those are social reasons why they go out. So,
Dude, time flew by. We're about to go to the rapid fire round. Before we do, where do I get the book and how do I stay in touch with you?
Well, the book now, the only way you can get the book now is Kindle because the hardcover is out of print. But you can get it on Amazon. Stop asking for referrals. It'll pop right up. You can get the Kindle edition. So that's the best way to get the book.
And who should anyone reach out to you because you're looking to make friends? Is there a certain kind of person? Who should reach out to you and why?
Well, if you're within 10 years of retirement and you've not done a long-term tax projection and you've not settled on a written income plan, then you should talk to me because you need those couple of things. And that's what we've centered our business around. So I would be happy to help. And what I'll do is I'm happy to do a study before I ask anybody to be a client. I think I may have mentioned this. You know, we do a quick study to project those, to analyze their 1040 and do a quick tax map for them. But while we have all the information, we apply some of our basic strategies to see, okay, so how much value is there here? And we would not, if we can't generate enough value, we won't ask somebody to be a client. If we can't generate enough value that to at least be a multiple of our fee, then, you know, we'll say, here you go, here's your map, here's your analysis. Best of luck. If there's anything we can do for you, let us know. But if we do generate enough value, then we'll say, you know, it looks like there's a lot of value here. Let's talk about what it would be like to be a client and, you know, what that would look like and what it would cost.
Study, plan, cost. They'll know how you make your money. And, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. We want people to be empowered, whether it's you or someone else, as long as they can check those boxes and over deliver. At least we know we're working with someone good. And if they can, possibly we need to get a second opinion.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So rapid fire. This is just kind of short, sweet, fill in the blank, whatever kind of questions. I often start with coffee or tea.
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite time of year in the Rochester area?
Christmas.
Christmas. Okay. Winter or specifically Christmas?
I love Christmas and I love in Rochester, I love spring. So Lilac Festival or Christmas, take your pick.
Love the Lilac Festival. Favorite ice cream? Haven't asked that one in a while. Do you like ice cream?
Cherry vanilla.
Cherry vanilla. What are you learning right now? We already talked about SVB. Is there anything we didn't touch on that you're learning about right now?
Oh boy. Well, I'm a little obsessive about health, so I'm always doing research into you know, healthy diets and that kind of stuff. I'm starting to read a book about the three of the women who helped found the libertarian movement. So that's my current thing to study.
We'll have to have a different conversation on libertarianism. that's fascinating. Okay. Anything we miss that's just lingering on your heart or mind that you want to spit out? I think we covered a lot today. I'm impressed.
I think we did cover a lot. You know, I can't think of anything. I love Rochester. I love this area. It has its challenges, but there are a lot of opportunities too. So, you know, it's a great place to be. And there's nothing else that was really on my mind that I can think of.
We mentioned to reach out. Did we say where? What's the best way to keep in touch? Is there a website, social media platform, email? The best way?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn or you can go to focusedwealthadvisors.com and I'm right there.
LinkedIn, focusedwealthadvisors.com, and in the show notes. So you can just click on it and you're there. Steven, thanks for coming on the show, man. Oh, your podcast. Name the podcast again so we can go ahead and subscribe.
My podcast, 30 Minute Money, 30minute.money.
30 Minute Money. All right. A lot of call to actions. I'm not going to create any more. It's been a pleasure, man. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks, Ben. It's been a lot of fun to talk with you. Appreciate coming onto the program with you.
Thanks, Steven. Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.